What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we finally have some new UFC fights to talk about with you guys, some new UFC news. But other than that, we're just going to go over Dana White's Contender Series today as episode 7. We'll be going down tomorrow, Tuesday, the 23rd. Also, we're going to be recapping NFL Week 3. It was big. We had some huge fantasy performances, some upsets, and my Minnesota Vikings, right after I said last week, never blow out opponents, decided to blow out the Bengals. It was awesome. And we're going to end today's episode recapping Wrestlepalooza, which I certainly have my thoughts on. I wasn't able to really watch it in full, but I went back and rewatched all of it. I did catch the last two matchups live as they happened, and safe to say it was a bit underwhelming. But don't worry, we'll be back to our regular UFC predictions as this upcoming weekend we do have a event going down in Perth, Australia, which I'm going to have to find some time to actually record that episode. It's gonna be a chaotic week for me. I got a lot moving and shaking. I'll update you all more so on my life on the next episode. As you know, I like to keep everyone in the loop, and one important thing about staying in the loop is that the UFC has updated us with some new fights, which I'm gonna dive into to start off the episode. It's what we always start off every episode with. If you're new here, if this is your first ever episode 225, this is your first episode, then we always start off talking about some new UFC fights, at least I'd say 98% of the time. So kicking us off, UFC 323 as a brand new prelim matchup as the undefeated 8-0 Mansoor Abdul-Malik is back to take on Antonio Trocoli. Now, Mansoor Abdul-Malik ran into a bit of an issue when he took on Cody Brundage and for some reason couldn't put him away. Other than that, he has dominant knockouts of Dusko Todorovic and Nick Klein. And actually, that fight was ruled to a no contest or even a draw. I think it was ruled to a draw, actually, oddly enough. And as for Antonio Trocoli, look, he's been knocked out twice so far in the UFC. They had him go against Ibo Aslan to get knocked out, and they had him go against, Oh my gosh. Was it Ibo Aslan? Or it might have been, I know it was, oh, Sharmagomedov and Ibo Aslan. I think those are the two guys that, no, he fought someone else. I have no idea. But Antonio Trocoli is taking on Mansoor Abdul-Malik, and it is set up for Mansoor Abdul-Malik to get a highlight reel knockout in front of a red-hot Las Vegas crowd. That'll be going down December 6th, and it is one of the few matchups we found out for that card. We have not had many. We don't even know what the main event, co-main event. We don't know what the main card's going to be, so I'm excited to see what they elect to go with. UFC Vegas 112, the final event of the year on December 13th, has a new middleweight matchup as Cesar Almeida, who hasn't fought since winning on the first card of the year. This is hilarious. He's got to be the only fighter to fight on the first card of the year and the last card of the year. Nothing in between. But Cesar Almeida is coming back. And by the way, he had the best knockout of the year for a while after he knocked out Abdul Razak Al-Hassan at UFC Vegas 101. He's taken on, though, a very tough debutant in Cesare Olkajcic. Cesare Olkajcic absolutely destroyed the O'Hag. I mean, this guy murdered him on Dana White's Contender Series. And by the way, he holds wins over UFC veterans Chris Fishgold and Tom Breiss. So he's 16-3. I can't remember. He's either at 13 or 14 career finishes. He is the younger brother of Michael Olkajcic. We all love Michael. We know Michael Olkajcic. And he'll be representing the Fighting Nerds who actually released this fight new. This should be a good fight. I really hope this is on the main card of this Vegas Apex card, unless they beef it up and it's nowhere near it. But this should be an excellent middleweight matchup, and I'm predicting someone is going to sleep. UFC Vegas 110 on November 1st has a heavyweight fight as the number 10 ranked Ante Dileje, who might even be ranked number 11th now, I don't even know, takes on the number 6 ranked Waldo Cortez Acosta. Waldo recently lost his second UFC fight and snapped his winning streak, 5-fight winning streak, I think it was, when he lost to Sergey Pavlovich, that's who it was, right? Sergey Pavlovich, yeah, very boring fight, left little to be desired, and he's taking on a guy in Ante Dileje who came into the UFC and absolutely starched Marcin Tybura. He is coming in with some red hot heat, and we love a new Croatian boy. His nickname's Walking Trouble. He's boys with Tom Aspinall. We want to see Ante Dileje succeed in the UFC. I'm a little surprised this isn't the main event. I don't know if that's going to change or anything, but as of right now, November 1st, this is not the main event. And that's because I'm just realizing in the next new fight news, we have the main event as the number 12 ranked featherweight Steve Garcia Jr. takes on number 13th ranked David Onama. Yeah. it's coming back to me now. Yeah, I remembered why I had it listed in this order. But yeah, so that'll be your co-main event, I presume. Your main event, yeah, Steven Mean Machine Garcia. He's on a 6-fight winning streak, 5 of those wins by knockout. Recently beat Calvin Kattar. He's also beaten Chepe Marisco, also beaten Chase Hooper. This guy has been on a roll, and he called this. After his last win, after Steve beat Calvin Kattar, he said, I want David Onama in a UFC Vegas main event, UFC Vegas Apex main event, and they just listened to him. So, taking on David Onama, who's ranked at number 13. David recently beat Giga Chikadze, somewhat close matchup. He's 6-2 in the UFC, 14-2 professionally. Also very good. I kind of hate that these two are fighting, but I mean, you know, I love both of them, so high-class matchup. It should be entertaining. I got Steve Garcia all day. I think his crisp boxing is going to give David trouble, because David is really a first round, like, he'll go out and try and put you away, which he has insane knockout power. Look at the Gabriel Santos, look at the Jonathan Pierce wins. Those were dominant. So I'm going to go with Steve Garcia here. David might even be shooting for takedowns late, and Steve will just be hitting on him. But first 5-round fight for both of these guys, this is going to be a fun Apex main event. People are already hating on this, and I'm like, no, good co-main event, good main event. I'm rocking with it. UFC Vegas 112, you know, that's not the same card. They're fighting at UFC Vegas 110, the last two matches we talked about. We're back to the final card of the year, December 13th, as Alan AJ Fry will be making his UFC heavyweight debut as he takes on the UFC heavyweight debut into Guilherme Kong Pat. So this is probably going to be really random to most people, but Guilherme Pat was supposed to fight on Dayweiss Contender Series. His matchup got canceled. They're just fast-tracking him to the UFC against another undefeated heavyweight in Alan Fry. Now, I don't know nothing about either of these guys, but they are 31 for Guilherme, and they are 27 for AJ Fry, or Alan AJ Fry. Neither of them have any notable wins. Neither of them got nothing going for them, but one's 6-0, one's 5-0. And when I look at them, I kind of lean more towards Guilherme Pat. But we'll have to see. This is a very random matchup. It's super, super unorthodox. We'll have to see what comes of it. UFC Vegas 110, November 1st, new matchup, welterweight Phil Rowe. Phil Rowe is back. He's 4-3 professionally, and yeah, 11-5 in the UFC. Phil Rowe always back for another fight. This time, he's taking on the Korean Tyson, Jung-Hyuk Ko, who beat Oban Elliott in dominant fashion. I can't imagine a world where Phil Rowe wins this. I really can't. I think Jung-Hyuk Ko is going to obliterate him. He's 12-2 professionally, and after that dominant win over Oban Elliott, I'm picking Jung-Hyuk Ko over a lot of people here. Fight. So best of luck to Phil Rowe, but this is a decent matchup on that Vegas card. Second to last matchup I have to talk about with you guys. If you liked unranked heavyweights, you'll love this one. Marek Bujila Buljo. What type of name is that? Makes his UFC debut as he takes on fellow UFC debutant Jose Montanha Luiz. Jose, 6-1. Coming in from Brazil, we're making his debut. He'll be taking on the Polish Marek Bulijo, who is 6-0 undefeated. This one will be a UFC Qatar. So I think the UFC is trying to get more heavyweights in the company. Certainly the heavyweights division is one of their weakest divisions in the company, which is funny because Daniel Cormier said the heavyweight championship in the UFC should be and is the most accredited title in the entire world. Like, it literally means you are pound for pound the biggest, the best person on the planet. Because when we really think about it, a heavyweight should be able to dispatch flyweights, bantamweights, lightweights, welterweights. So it's funny to think that as of right now, especially since, you know, I would say since 2018, since 2017, the belt hasn't really meant as much as it used to. So they're just testing the waters with a lot of these UFC guys coming in. So like we said, another random heavyweight matchup they're making. This one, Marek, is coming in. He is going to be 32 when this fight takes place. And as for Jose Luis, he will be 29 when that fight takes place. I don't know a lick about either man, but you know what? Good luck to both of them. And this one's not official, but it's basically going to be made official sooner or later. And that is, Santiago Ponzinibbio is out of his matchup at UFC Rio, October 11th, against Vicente Luque. Stepping in, moving up 15 pounds in weight, is Joel Alvarez. I was wondering why they removed Joel Alvarez from the UFC rankings at lightweight. It's because of his weight issues, they're finally moving him up to welterweight. I love that matchup. I think Joel should dispatch of Vicente Luque pretty easily. And I can't remember if Joel is 21-2, 21-3, or like 19-3, but he's 100% finish rate, which with either 21, 20, or 23 wins. Like, he is a ridiculous finisher, and he should be very fun to watch. So keep your eyes peeled for that one. That's one of the bigger ones announced. But yeah, November 1st, we know the Apex main event. Now we're just waiting on UFC 323. and UFC Vegas 111 going down November 8th. So we'll stay alert for those announcements. I'm sure they'll come out here and there. And also we know what the stage is going to look like for the UFC White House card, and it looks pretty crazy. I just really hope they don't elect to go with Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler. I think that would be a complete miss on the UFC's part. No one wants to see that. We want to see, like, actual fighters that fight the UFC fighting and just make it a big American matchup. I also hope that they have only American fighters on here. And people are going to be like, oh, that's, you can't be like racist like that. You can't be, I don't even know what's it called when you're like, don't like people from a certain country. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is what we don't want is for us to have a fight like Dustin Poirier and Islam Makhachev where the Russian is absolutely killing the American. You know what I'm saying? So we really got to structure the card where you're going to be having Americans fight and Americans win, because that's what the 4th of July is all going to be about. But it would be hilarious if we did like Tom Aspinall, who's a Brit, and he takes on, who's an American, like Curtis Blaydes, who's a red-blooded American, and just starches him in round one. That would be pretty funny. But yeah, those are all your new UFC fights, all your new UFC news. Lots of exciting stuff going down, and also something exciting going down this Tuesday is Dana White's Contender Series. We've been on a roll, guys. We've had some great events last week, handed out some new contracts. We went 5-0. We had two great knockouts with Iwo Baranowski, and actually, I think it was, yeah, Cody Chochamik got a knockout as well, and Tommy Gant had a good finish. We had four contracts last week. This week, the fights do look good. I've done my early predictions, and I only have one underdog for my early predictions. So as I go through, as I break these down, I'll see if I change, but I usually don't change my predictions from when I look originally. We've been doing really good on predicting them, so if you like betting, keep your eyes peeled, because last week we nailed a lot of underdogs. So kicking off our card, light heavyweights, which are some of my favorite divisional matchups that take place on the Contender Series, happen in the light heavyweight division, as we have Rafael Bipolar Tobias taking on Jair de Mahmoud Oliveira. Bipolar. Rafael Tobias, what a goofy nickname. Rafael is coming in 13-1 as the minus 350 favorite. He is the biggest favorite on this entire card. At only 22 years old, he is also the youngest fighter on this entire card. He stands at 6'2", holding a 5-inch height advantage over his opponent, Jair de Oliveira. He rides a 5-fight winning streak and fights out of Brazil. He trains at Chute Box Monstro, the same gym as former UFC title challenger Jennifer Maia. Remember when she fought Valentina back during COVID? No one remembers that? Yeah, because it was so forgettable. Of his 13 wins, 10 are by finish, 5 KOs, and 5 subs, and he only has one of his career losses is by knockout. His one loss is by knockout. 8 of his 13 wins have came in round number 1, and his last win was on April 12th. Rafael looks dominant. He's fought in some solid competition out of the UFC and holds a big size advantage over the plus 275 underdog, Jair de Oliveira. 29 years old, he is 7 years his senior, but like I said, 5 inches in height. He is at a discrepancy. And I mean, he looks like 20. He looks 22, and Rafael Tobias looks 29. Like, I just feel like this is set up for Rafael Tobias to get a nasty knockout. Of Jared Oliveira, 6 career wins. He has 5 finishes. So no losses to his name. 4 KOs and 1 sub of those 6 wins. His last win came in May of 2024. All of his finishes have came in round number 1. Yeah. I looked at both these guys. If you look at their pictures, I haven't seen any fight highlights of anyone on this card, but just from appearance alone, I'm going with Rafael Tobias. He's got the look. He's got the experience. He trains at a better gym, and he's fought more recently. He's fought 3 times since the last time Jair de Oliveira fought. I mean, what has he been doing the last year and a half? Goodness me, Jair. But yeah, it is pretty funny. Jair de Oliveira looks 22 and Rafael Tobias looks 29. And when you're minus 350, I'm going to ride with you, Rafael Tobias. That's my prediction. Plus, he has double the experience that Jair de Oliveira has. Next up on Dana White's Contender Series, Episode 7 in Season 9, we're in the men's featherweight division as Justice Torres takes on Javier Blair Reyes. This is crazy. Justice Torres 12-3. Javier Reyes 21-5. This man has had 26 professional fights coming in with 21 wins. One of the most experienced fighters not only I've ever seen on Dana White's Contender Series, but certainly the most by far this season. Javier is the minus 190 favorite in this contest against the 12-3 Justice Torres. Now, for Javier, he is 31 years old from Bogota, Colombia, and I've been watching a lot of Narcos with Lexi, my girlfriend, and let me just say, I know a lot about Bogota, Colombia, but he has moved from Colombia to Las Vegas to train here. He is 5'7", has a 73-inch reach, and of his 21 career wins, he has 17 finishes, 9 KOs, 9 subs. I expect domination from this guy. Of his 5 defeats, he has been finished 3 times, twice by knockout, 1 by sub. One of those times, oddly enough, Talarian Douglas, who we watched 2 weeks ago, absolutely starch his opponent. Talarian Douglas is going to be a problem in the UFC, so of those 5 losses, Javier, that's a good loss to have. He was originally supposed to fight Ícaro Brito. Ícaro pulled out. He was then supposed to fight Robbie Ring. Robbie Ring pulled out. So third in line is Justice Torres, who's the plus 160 underdog. Javier did last fight in June, so he has fought in recently, one would say. The underdog, Justice, 27 years old, so 4 years younger than Javier Reyes, fights out of Texas. He has 1 inch in height over Javier, as he is 5'8", but is at a 4-inch reach discrepancy, with an only in 69-inch reach, as opposed to the 73-inch reach for Javier Reyes. Of Justice's 12 wins, six of them are by finish, 5 kills and 1 sub. I was going to say 5 for a second, but I was realizing I was just looking at the knockouts. And of his 3 defeats, they've all been decisions. So his last win was in August, where he was able to pick up a round 1 knockout. All of his career has taken place in Fury FC. He was able to win a belt over there. Actually, I don't know if he won a belt over there. I can't really remember. But Justice Torres, you know, coming in, he's a southpaw. He's younger. Both of their birthdays are in October. October 19th for Justice, October 10th. For Javier Reyes. So I always find that interesting. Look, I'm going with Javier Reyes, 21-5. He's been fighting some tough competition. And I'm not saying Fury FC doesn't bring out good competition, but you know, when you're the third in line, usually you haven't won. I've seen that. There's a pattern of the Anyways Contender Series. Sometimes short notice people can come in to get a win. But even when you're like a second replacement, you're not winning. And mind you, this is a third replacement for Javier Reyes. So I'm going to go with Javier. I'm even going to go with a submission here. I always see when guys come in with like 9 KOs, 8 subs, they usually nab that 8th sub or that 8th knockout to give them a perfect number of KOs and subs for their career. It's just another pattern I've come to recognize. By the way, for that first fight, I got Rafael Tobias getting himself a knockout over Jair de Oliveira. That's what I got there. So Javier Reyes, I hate to go with the favorite. You know, I always love picking underdogs, but for this contest, I think Javier Reyes is going to get it done. Then next up, I don't know if this is either the second or the third. I feel like it's only the second woman's fight of the season. We head to the women's flyweight division as Gisela Abraba Chavez takes on Sofia La Bruja Montenegro. Ooh, fun names, ladies. Gisela Chavez, 6-0. Sofia Montenegro, 6-1. And oddly enough, they have all their stats listed on the UFC stats page. I've had to go out on Tapeology. I took notes for every single fight, and I had to find the height and reach for every fighter. And oddly enough, for some reason, they have the women's listed on here. So thank you very much. Gisela is 5'4". Sofia is 5'6". So 2 inches in height for Sofia, but 1 inch in reach for Gisela, 68-67. Both women fight in the orthodox stance. 2 years in age is the discrepancy here. Gisela is coming in at 28. Sofia is at 26. Sofia Montenegro, -180. Gisela, +150. Sofia Montenegro is 26 years old from Argentina. She currently rides a 3-fight winning streak and trains at Alpha Team in Argentina, same gym as Esteban Ribavix, who is making a name for himself in the UFC. Now, she has 3 KOs and 1 sub of her 6 career wins, and her last win did come in June, funny enough. Another funny thing is Sofia Montenegro's 1 career loss was a 10-second knockout. I always love to see that, but that shouldn't affect her, as I'm trying to remember who the other fighter was. I take so many notes on so many of these guys. Was it? I'm trying to see who it was. It was someone on a previous episode. Oh my gosh, I'll never find this name. But someone on a previous episode of Dana White's Contender Series had 1 career loss, and it was a 6-second knockout. And I was like, how is that? But oh, it was the guy who trains with the Korean Zombie. I can't even remember his name. Didn't get a contract. This was last week. Yeah, it was, what's his name? In Su Hwang. His only career loss was 6 seconds. Funny enough. So other than that, Sofia Montenegro has done pretty good for herself, fought in some good competition. I mean, she has a 66% finish rate, not too bad. Her opponent, Gisela Chavez, 28 years old from Brazil, was originally supposed to fight Regina Tarine, so Sofia is a short-notice replacement. Her last win did come in April, and she has a 50% finish rate, with 3 of her wins coming by knockout. There's not much to go off of here, guys. Gisela was the original fighter on here. Looking at their images, I liked Gisela's appearance much more in terms of looking like a fighter. So this one is up in the air, but being that I haven't picked an underdog yet, I don't think I'm going to go with an underdog as well in the final two, which I'll get to that reasoning in a second. So I'm going to go with Jessica Chavez here. She is still undefeated. She, you know, was originally supposed to fight. I will say Sophia training with Esmont Rivix is a good sign. But then again, like I bring up, Intu Huang trains with the Korean Zombie and put up a horrible performance against Patty McCrory last week. Jessica, you know, last fought in April, still looking fresh. We'll go with her. There isn't much reasoning I have to give here. I'm just hoping for a finish. I really am hoping for a finish here. The last ones fight we had on the season was a banger. So I'm hoping that these women look at that and go, okay, I'm going to up that. I'm going to go for a finish. I'm going to go to submission and knockout and get it done. But hey, both these women appear to look for knockouts in their fights. That's what I love to see. Second to last matchup of the evening. Got a fun one here with some goofy names. Featherweight division as Brahman El Jaretes Zurcher takes on Murtazali the Highlight Magomedov. Uh-oh, when you see the Magomedov last name, you better run, boy, because things are about to get dangerous. Braham Zurcher coming in, minus 115. Murtazali Magomedov, minus 105. Both these guys, favorites. The odds makers can't choose who the underdog is. This is going to be the best matchup of the night. Braham, 9-0. Murtazali, 9-0. 1 inch in height for Murtazali, 5'11 to 5'10. 70-inch reach for both men. Orthodox stance for both men. The only other thing you can find is Brahan is 29 and Magomedov is 26. The matchmakers have outdone themselves here. Kind of sucks one of these guys has to lose their undefeated record. We'll start with Braham Zurcher, who's 29 years old, of course. He is from Mexico, but now trains in Nevada. 7 of his 9 wins are by finish with 4 KOs and 3 subs. He went 5-0 in the PFL, but hasn't fought since June of 2024. His opponents have been pretty good, I have seen, especially fighting in the PFL, but at the same time, the PFL isn't as big as the UFC. Braham is being backed by a lot of people, especially since he is a tinge more of a favorite, and Murtazali might even fall into the underdog category. Come actual day of the fights. So Brahan, a lot of people are riding with him. He has a lot of hype, but he doesn't have the last name of Magomedov. Murtazali Magomedov is 26 years old from Kyrgyzstan and has a 100% finish rate. 4 KOs and 5 subs. His last fight, December 2024. So the good thing is both these guys haven't fought in just around a year. It's actually been over a year for Brahan, and it's nearing a year for Murtazali. Murtazali has had some very good opponent records out of the usual Dana White Contender Series people we see. Last guy he beat was 11-4, before that 7-2, before that 4-3-1, before that 11-7, and before that 17-8. So I always love to look at the opponent records, because one thing that I notice sometimes is guys will come in 8-0, perfect record, and you'll look, and they've only fought one guy with a positive record. Everyone else is 0-2, 1-5, 2-11, like I kid you not, I've seen, one of the guys who, oh my gosh, who was it, was it last week, was it Adam Livingston, no, it was Tommy Gantt, who won, fought a guy who was 10-40 and beat him. I mean, come on, what are we doing there? So, Murtazali Magomedov is fighting some good guys. I will say the PFL is a high-level league, especially to go undefeated 5-0 in, but I do like Murtazali Magomedov, especially since he is lesser of a favorite than Brahman. So if he falls into the underdog category, I really like him. This should be the best fight on the card. Brahman Zurcher is looking to bring it. So is Murtazali Magomedov. This could go either way. I don't ride or die on these picks. I don't even keep track of them. But I always have to predict every fight, because whenever I watch it, a fight of any kind, whenever I watch it a game, I always like to have a team that I hope is going to win, especially during the World Wars. Let's go America. And I don't forget I said that. Alrighty, the main event of Dana White's Contender Series, if you will. The final fight of the evening is what it should be more so called. As Dejane Barbier takes on Montes, pray with me, boys, Kondratavicius. Wow. Wow, a beautiful name. A beautiful name, Montas. We're just going to call you Montas. Danji Barbier. Okay, these are the toughest names that I've seen so far. 7-0 for Barbier with a no contest. Montes, 7 wins, 1 defeat. Both men are 6'3", 2 inches in reach for Dejane Barbier, 77-75. And yeah, orthodox stance. 2 years older is Barbier. He's 28. Montes is 26. Barbier is currently minus 150. Montes Kondratavicius is +125. I cannot wait to hear how the broadcast team actually pronounces this name, because it has been a tongue twister when I've been going over this. So with Barbier, he's from Croatia. Tawante Deleje might have a good brother in the UFC. Trains at AT&T Zagreb, so he trains at another of the offshoots of American Top Team, which is a good gym. They have gyms all over the world. They breed good fighters. Of his 7 wins, 7 finishes, 4 KOs and 3 subs. His last fight was November of 2024, so it's been 11 months almost, roughly around 10, since he last fought. So Barbier trains at a good gym, 100% finish rate. We'll see how he does as he takes on the man from Lithuania, Montis Kondravicius. He trains at a fighter house in Lithuania, same as literally the only other Lithuanian fighter I know, Jelija Storylenko. So he trains with a former UFC fighter. Of his 7 wins, 7 finishes, 5 KOs and 2 subs, his only loss was by submission, and he currently rides a 2-fight winning streak. His last win was a fight in Cage Warriors back in March. They gave him a fight in Cage Warriors, and he was able to get it done. So 100% finish rate. Both these guys young. Both of them looking good. I'm going with Barbier, just because I liked his appearance a bit more. He appeared a bit more primed, but hey, Montes could come in and get a nasty knock on this one. Plus, he's an underdog, and I always love to ride with the underdog. So I have literally no expectations for this fight. I don't know much. I'm sure I may see some highlights on the TikTok, on the Instagram coming up, but as of right now, I'm going to go with Barbier. I just kind of liked him a bit more, and whenever I do an initial go-through of my notes, I always make predictions, and I'm trying to think of last week if I changed anything, and I didn't. No, I didn't change anything, so I've been riding with my predictions, and they always appear to be right. I have good senses. So there's your little preview of Dana White's Contender Series, Season 9, Episode 7. I'm excited to watch it, guys, and I'm, you know, sponsor me, Dana White, but I'll say it outright, it is entertaining to watch these. It is entertaining to watch these. There are some great fights, and you can just see the passion in some of the fighters trying to get into the UFC. So with that, we'll move along from Dana White's Contender Series to our recap of Week 3 of the NFL season. A lot of fun stuff went down in the NFL, and you know, I'm a little worried in fantasy football. I need a lot to happen tonight, so let's go over it. Kicking off the week, we headed to the NFC East to watch the Bills beat the Dolphins. It was actually a pretty entertaining game. I was able to watch the ending, and the Bills really clutched up at the end, thanks to the Dolphins just completely whiffing, getting a pass or an encroachment or whatever. They hit the kicker. When the kicker was kicking, they hit the kicker in a stupid movement. But top fantasy performances from the 31-21 win for the Bills. Bills 23.02 for Josh Allen in my PPR league, so maybe even a bit more for you if you have different league statistics, but this is just the one I use, and it's usually the standard for most leagues. James Cook had a 20 bomb. Dalton Kincaid 17.6. Devin Achane 16.1 for the Dolphins. Tyreek 15. Jalen Waddle 14. Both of those 0.9s as well. But yeah, Dolphins, they were, they scored. It was all tied up at 21, and then Khalil Shakir got a touchdown pass from Josh Allen, and Matt Prater sealed the game with a 48-yard field goal with 20 seconds left. Tua Tagovailoa, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. It's just not looking the same, man. There's at one point, Tua Tagovailoa was a fantasy monster, and now he's just average. Average as could be, but I wasn't too bad because I was playing him this week in my 16-man league. Devin Achane, 62 yards on the ground, also had 7 catches for 29 yards. The lone touchdown is ran in by Ollie Gordon II on the ground. As for Tyreek, he caught one of the touchdowns, and so did Jalen Waddle. So two of the best wide receivers on the team catching the touchdowns. The Dolphins, rough. 0-3. They have a minus 41-point differential. They are one of the worst teams in the league. They're really going to try and turn their luck around coming up when they take on, I believe it is the Jets next week, which is a winnable game, but at this point, I have no idea what to tell them. As for the Bills, Josh Allen, 22 for 28, 213 yards, 3 touchdowns, ran for 25 yards. Yeah. Yeah, he's a beauty. He's one of the best in the league. It's really incredible watching him play. He is one of one, one would say. James Cook, 19 rushes, 108 yards, and a tutty, was looking fantastic. He also had 3 catches for 10 yards. Kincaid caught a tutty. Shakir caught a tutty. Even Elijah Moore had 2 catches, but it was Keon Coleman's 3 catches for 20 yards, which I'm sure left some fantasy managers a bit unhappy. But, it happens. The Bills have a lot of weapons, and sometimes it's just Josh Allen and James Cook, and they can just work their magic. Plus, 31-point differential. They're 3-0. They're doing amazing. They are looking great. Next week, they'll play the Saints, then they play the Patriots, then they play the Falcons, then the Panthers, then finally the Chiefs on the 2nd. I'm predicting it's going to be a good start to the season for the Buffalo Bills. But Yeah, good way to kick off the game, or even the week, I should say. Good way to kick off the week on Thursday night football. Getting into our Sunday games, Vikings and Bengals. And if you're in a league where you, for some reason, have defensive players, if you had Isaiah Rodgers Sr., I mean, you'd have had the best day ever, as the Vikings defense had 32 points, the greatest performance from a player in a game of all time. I think it was Isaiah Rodgers' PPR ranking or whatever, PR ranking. I don't even know what it means. It was 99.99. It was almost 100% because I don't think you can get 100%, but it was insane. Vikings win 48-10. I have never seen domination from the Vikings like this. This is something I've always wanted, is to watch the Vikings get a blowout win, and they almost never do. So amazing work from the Vikings. And unfortunately, the one week I benched TJ Hockenson, he gets 15.9 points and a touchdown, which was embarrassing. And Jordan Mason, 23.6 points, a breakout game for him. The only high spot on the Bengals was 10 points from Drew Sample, their tight end. That's literally it. Jamar Chase had 8. Chase Brown had 6. Like, it was abysmal. We owned the Bengals. 2 touchdowns in the first quarter, including an 87-yard pick 6 from Isaiah Rodgers, and Carson Wentz was slinging the ball. Quarter 2 comes around as Isaiah Rodgers gets a 66-yard fumble recovery, never done in a game before. Jordan Mason runs in a touchdown, and Will Reichert hits a 62-yarder to send us to the half. Third quarter, Jordan Mason touchdown, TJ Hockenson pass. Amazing. Early on in the fourth, Drew Sample came in, caught touchdown pass from Jake Browning, but that was it. The Vikings weren't even trying. They were just trying to get out of there. Cincy, Jake Browning, 1 touchdown, 2 picks, abysmal, a lot of fumbles. Bengals turned the ball over so many times. Samaje Perine, 4 rushes, 21 yards, had more rushing yards than Chase Brown, who had 10 rushes for 3 yards. I mean, we locked up the running game of the Bengals. Jamar Chase, 5 catches, 50 yards, but I don't know, how do you have 8.9 points then? Did he fumble? I have no idea what happened to Jamar Chase. That is so random. Noah Fant, 5 catches, 26 yards. T. Higgins held the 115-yard catch. The Bengals are just lost right now without Joe Burrow, with probably forever. Joe Burrow's probably just done. He's probably the new Andrew Luck. I don't know what they're going to do. I really don't. They're still the head of the AFC North, unless until the Ravens win their game tonight over the Lions. We'll have to see if that happens. I don't know. But Bengals, 2-1, still are the best team in the AFC North, despite having a outstanding minus 33 point differential. I have never seen that before. Funny enough, AFC North, what is going on with you? So we'll see how the Bengals bounce back when they take on the Broncos next week on Monday Night Football. But if I'm being honest, I'm not giving them any opportunities to do well. I got the Vikings all season long, man. I mean, come on. Come on, Vikings. What are we doing here, man? This is the greatest showing I've ever seen from you guys. I'm blown away. Where has this been all my life? Where has this Vikings team been? They are now the second best team in the NFC North, as the Packers are somehow still ahead of them. I don't know how that logic works. Vikings have a amazing plus 35 or plus 25 point differential. One of the two. Carson Wentz had 173 yards on 14 for 20 throwing for 2 touchdowns. And we even had Max Brosber come in and throw for 29 yards. Good for you, Max. Actually went to the University of Minnesota. Jordan Mason, 16 rushes, 116 yards, 2 touchdowns. Yeah, thank you, San Francisco. We'll take them off your hands. JJ, 5 catches, 75 yards. Hawk, 5 catches, 49 yards, and a tutty. If I know Wentz is playing, I'm so starting Hawkinson next week, dude. I am hands down starting him. Josh Oliver caught a touchdown. Adam Thielen, no touchdowns, but they have some targets, in case you're wondering. We even gave Cam Akers the ball, and there's this guy named Zach Scott. He's apparently our backup running back. Was unaware of that. Vikings will keep their momentum rolling when they take on the Steelers overseas and the Browns overseas for the next 2 weeks. Very happy as a Vikings fan. I felt great joy. Another game that went down at noon, Steelers and Patriots. And since I had the Steelers defense, I was very happy with this performance. Patriots losing 21-14 in a defensive battle. Steelers get 15 points for them. I don't know if they had a touchdown or something. I think they just locked in. Got some fumbles, got some picks. They did well. Jalen Warren, 13 points. Calvin Austin III, 12 points. But it was Hunter Henry. Oh my gosh, 29 points for him. It's the rare, the Hunter Henry performance. He always has 1 or 2 games where he gets 20-something points. Other than that, he gets 0 points the whole year. Drake May gets 19, and then Trayvon Henderson, 7. It was the Drake May and Hunter Henry show. Close game all around. It was 14-7 heading into the half before Hunter Henry's touchdown tied it up. And then Calvin Austin and Aaron Rodgers clutched up with 2 minutes left, putting the Steelers ahead. And their defense came up big on the final drive of the game. Aaron Rodgers, 139 yards, 2 touchdowns and pick, was very underwhelming. I mean, Jalen Warren, 18 rushes, only 47 yards. Keith Gainwell managed to run in a touchdown. but there wasn't really any bright spots besides the defense. I mean, Jalen Warren, 5 catches, 34 yards. Calvin Austin and DK Metcalf both catch touchdowns. So if you have DK Metcalf, you're probably happy with that. But other than that, not much going on in the receiving department. For the Patriots, Drake May, 268 yards, 2 touchdowns, a pick. Kind of feel bad, man. He played his heart out. And Hunter Henry's 8 catches for 90 yards and 2 tutties was outstanding. But yeah, Trayvon Henderson kind of struggling. It was kind of funny because Ramondre Stevenson only had 4 carries this game. Like, Steelers defense struck fear into the Patriots, and I was loving it. Looking at the rankings now, since I just messed up my screen as I went to look, the Patriots are 1-2, second in the absolutely abysmal AFC East. I mean, the Bills are just leagues ahead than the other 3 teams. They have a -8 point differential, and next week they get to take on the Panthers, so we'll see if they can win that one. I predict that Drake May should, but we'll have to see. As for the Steelers, you know, they are now 2-1, second in the AFC North, and yeah, good for them. They're 2-0 on the road. You gotta love it. They take on my Minnesota Vikings next week, which means they're definitely going to lose. That's my prediction, at least. I don't think they're going to get past my Vikings. No shot. Staying with the AFC, the Colts blow out the Titans 41-20. This Colts team, what an unexpected just unit. What an unexpected unit of a team. Jonathan Taylor, 32.8 fantasy points. I had to play him. I had to play him. Makes me sad, but don't worry. Lamar Jackson's got my back tonight on Monday Night Football. Michael Pittman at 19, and the Indianapolis defense, 16 points. For the Titans, 13.9 from Pollard, 13.8 from Io Manar, the wide receiver, and Cam Ward had 11.96. You know, it was a rough start to the game. You know, the game starts off 17-3, eventually turns into 17-6, and that's 20-6, and into halftime, okay? Then Michael Pittman gets a touchdown. But then, you know, the Titans answer and all is looking good. And then Jonathan Taylor rips off a 46-yard run. And then you get the Titans scoring. And then you get a 3-minute drive where Jonathan Taylor scores. And after that, the Titans were just worn down, worn out, and there was nothing saving them. GG's for the Titans here as they will start their season 0-3 and have a -43-point differential. They are quite literally the worst team in the league. Having Cam Ward has not helped you whatsoever. And the Colts, 3-0, one of the best teams in the league. I mean, they have 103.4, 56 points against. They are crazy. Daniel Jones, 228 yards and a touchdown. Jonathan Taylor, 102 yards, 3 rushing touchdowns. Good for him. Michael Pittman, 6 catches, 73 yards and a touchdown. Alec Pierce had 4 catches for 67 yards. And TJ Tyler Warren, 3 catches, 38 yards. Come on, get some more, pass more to our rookie tight end. Make him the new Sam Laporta, Brock Bowers. Cam Ward, best game of the season. Best game of his career so far. 219 yards, touchdown and a pick. Ran for 12 yards. He's trying. He's learning. Give him some time. Pollard, 45 yards and a tutty. Did what he had to do. Okonkwo led the day. 5 catches, 66 yards. Yeah, I don't know what to say for the Titans. I mean, I don't even know if I want to look at their schedule. They play the Texans next week, the Cardinals, the Raiders, the Patriots, Colts. They have such winnable games. Some just tells me they aren't going to win many games this season. As for the Colts, I mean, it's tough to say how they're going to do. It's tough to even predict Colts games because they could be good one week. They could be bad the next week. You know, you don't know. But they've started out perfect so far. You got to give them their flowers. That's all I'll say. You know, I'll give them that. But it won't really load until they play the Rams next week. Okay. Rams next week, 3 o'clock on a Sunday. I think the Rams might beat the Colts. But hey, if the Colts beat the Rams, look out, they're definitely going to be a unit. Texans, Jaguars was up next. And in the AFC South again, you get domination. Oh my gosh, the Jaguars beat the Texans 17-10. And the Texans are now 0-3 to start the year. Wow. Wow, this team is awful. And by the way, the Jaguars looked terrible. Terrible. This game was not good whatsoever. Biggest star of the game, 22.4 fantasy points for Nico Collins. Other than that, 13 points from the Jacksonville D, 12 from Brandon Strange, 10 from CJ Stroud. This is across both teams. It was literally Nico Collins was the only high point of this game because he had a 50-yard touchdown. CJ, 204 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. I mean, he has not looked the same since his rookie season. Nick Chubb, 9 rushes, 38 yards. Nothing else all around. Nico Collins, 8 catches, 104 yards, and a touchdown. The only high point on this team. For the Jags, Trevor Lawrence, 222 yards and a pick. Etienne rushes in a touchdown. Tootin rushes in a touchdown. Strange, the tight end, gets 6 catches for 61 yards. Brian Thomas, 2 catches for 55 yards. Travis Hunter, 1 21-yard catch. That was it. So not much going on in this game whatsoever, and, you know, it just came down to the Jaguars eventually punching in late and getting the win. They'll be 2-1 as they take on the 49ers, then the Chiefs, then the Seahawks, and the Rams. They got a rough schedule coming up ahead. As for the Texans, I mean, I don't even know what to predict. I think they're the best 0-3 team. You know, I'll say that. I certainly don't think they're a bad 0-3 team, but they will play the Titans next week, and such a winnable game, but it's also a divisional game, so I think can happen. 3:30 games rolled along, and this was the most shocking thing of the day. The Panthers beat the Falcons 30-0. 30-0. We've already had a shutout to start the season, and it's from the freaking Panthers. The Panthers just shut out the Falcons. What happened? What happened? Now, they're both tied for second place in the NFC South. Panthers 1-2, Falcons 1-2. The Panthers have a plus 9-point differential. What do you know? What a weird NFL world we live in. Bijan, 16 fantasy points, did what he could. Drake London, 10. Darnell Mooney, 8. The Carolina defense gets 17. The kicker, Ryan Fitzgerald, had 15. Or Riley Fitzgerald, whatever. And Bryce Young had 11. Starting off the game, Bryce Young got a touchdown. And Ryan Fitzgerald kicked a 57-yarder. As we got into the third quarter, it was 10-0. And then Charles Smith-Wade had an 11-yard pick 6. Ryan Fitzgerald hit a kick. Rico Dowdle ran a touchdown in the fourth, and Ryan Fitzgerald hit another field goal in the fourth quarter. Michael Penix, 172 yards and 2 picks, is benched for Kirk Cousins, who goes 5 of 7 for 29 yards. Bijan, 72 yards rushing, also had 5 catches for 39 yards. Yeah, nothing went well for this Falcons team at all. They looked terrible. Terrible to terrible, and I have no idea why. I really don't know why. Bryce Young, 121 yards. Yeah, that's it. Bryce Young is... Yeah, I don't think Bryce Young's going to be in the NFL much longer. That dude was doing nothing. Chuba Hubbard got a touchdown. Rico Dowdle got a touchdown. And you know what? They did let Bryce Young run in a touchdown. So he did get a touchdown. Torrey McMillan, 3 catches, 48 yards. That's about it. No one really showed out in this game, yet it was a 30-0 blowout. Funny how that works. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. My prediction is that the Panthers don't win many games. And honestly, if the Falcons play like this every week, they are not going to win many games. Let me just tell you that outright. They get to play the Commanders, then the Bills, then the 49ers. So they got a fun 3-game stretch up ahead of themselves. And the Panthers, actually, I don't really care what the Panthers have to do, but oh well. Keeping our noon games? Yeah, keeping our noon games rolling. One of the best games of the day. The Eagles beat the Rams 33-26 in a comeback for the ages. Great win. Great win for this Eagles team. They will improve to 3-0 and escape this one. All right, Rams will fall to 2-1. Puka Nacua, 22.8 points. Kyren Williams, 19.2. And the kicker, Cardi, 15. For the Eagles, 29 from Jalen Hurts, had 31 in some other leagues. AJ Brown had 22. Devontae Smith had 20. It was a passing affair for the Eagles. To let you all know, Jalen Hurts starts off the first drive, touchdown. Looking good. The Rams then score. Unanswered, 19 points. Yeah, not looking good whatsoever. But then it was lock-in time. Dallas Goedert, touchdown. A.J. Brown, touchdown. Devontae Smith, touchdown. And then on the game-winning kick for the Rams, it is blocked by Jordan Davis, who returns it 61 yards to end the game as time expires. And the Eagles win 33-26. Wow. While the defending champs look amazing. For the Rams, Matt Stafford, 196 yards, 2 touchdowns, a pick. Yeah, he did average. Kyren Williams, 94 yards. Blake Corum put up 53 yards. Puka Nacua, 11 catches, 112 yards. Devontae Adams had 3 catches for 56 yards and a touchdown. And Kyren Williams caught a touchdown himself. For Philly, 226 yards and 3 touchdowns for Jalen Hurts. He was airing it out. Saquon only had 46 yards on the ground. And of course, 40 yards and a touchdown for Jalen Hurts. Give him 4 on the day. A.J. Brown, 6 catches, 109 yards and a tutty. For Devontae Smith, 8 catches, 60 yards and a touchdown. Even Dallas Goedert, his lone catch was a 33-yard touchdown. Eagles looking good, looking fire, and they look to keep their momentum rolling as next week they will take on the Buccaneers, which should be a fantastic Sunday throwdown. For the Rams, I think we discussed them. They have a game coming up with someone we went over. It doesn't even matter. Great comeback win for the Eagles, and I expect them to have a good season overall. Another banger game, Buccaneers and Jets. Buccaneers escaped 29-27. Garrett Wilson put up 24 fantasy points. Tyrod Taylor, who started off rough, managed to nab just under 17. Nick Folk, the kicker, had 10. And as for the Buccaneers, 20 points from Chase McLaughlin. I mean, holy cow. He was actually dropped in my 16-man league by Mozzie. Mozzie, rough showing, dropping him. Baker, 17.72, and the Bucks D had 16. This game was back and forth. From the get-go, trading field goals, it started 6-3 in favor of the Jets, and then eventually it got out of control, and we had a 55-yard pick six to end the second quarter. Heading into the second half, it was 20-6, and then get another one field goal in the third quarter, and then the fourth quarter was amazing. Garrett Wilson catches a touchdown, then the Bucks kick a field goal, then back-to-back touchdowns after Alan Lazard catches a four-yard pass, and then there's a block kick, which leads to a 50-yard fumble return touchdown. Chase McLaughlin would then seal the game as time expires to win 29-27. The Buccaneers keeping their record intact. Good stuff. Good stuff for the Bucs. They're 3-0 to start the year with a plus 6 point differential. For the Jets, if you can believe it, they're 0-3. They're 0-3 somehow. They've been playing some like the Bills, the Steelers, and now the Bucs. They played some tough opponents and you know what? It's a proud loss to have. Nonetheless, you're still 0-3. Tyrod Taylor, 197 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. Leads the day on the ground as well with 48 yards. Brees Hall on 9 carries, only 31 yards. Garrett Wilson, 10 catches, 84 yards on touchdown. It's one of the only high spots for this Jets team. For the Bucs, Baker, 233 yards and a touchdown. Bucky Irving had 66 yards on the ground, and Baker had 44. He was running. Baker was looking prime in this game. Egbuka leads the day with 6 catches for 86 yards. And Mike Evans gets a touchdown as well on 4 of his catches. So good stuff for the Bucs. They'll be undefeated and they defeat the winless Jets, who still are yet to get a win. Tough, tough showings. Keeping our noon games a rolling. Commanders beat the Raiders 41-24. And am I ready to give up on Ashton Jeanty? I might be. I really might need to be. It's unfortunate. It really is unfortunate being an Ashton Jeanty fantasy holder. But I will say the Raiders have the player who has the current most fantasy points in a game this season. Trey Tucker, 40.9. Insane. Geno had 26. Brock Bowers had 9.8. For the Commanders, Marcus Mariota put up 20. Luke McCaffrey, 14. And Jeremy Nicholas, 13.8. Jeremy McNichols. I knew that. He had a 60-yard run in the second quarter. Trey Tucker catches 3 different touchdowns from Geno, including a 61-yarder, which was fantastic. And even Ja'Cory Crosby-Merritt and a touchdown. I might need to start him next week over Ashton Jeanty. For the Commanders, a good win. Good win for them. Starting off the season, they will improve to 2-1 and hold a plus 23-point differential. For the Raiders, they are now 1-2 and second in the AFC West. Geno Smith, 289 yards and 3 touchdowns, looked way better than he did last week, despite losing. Ashton Jeanty, 17 carries, 63 yards. That's it. Ah, Ashton, what are we doing with you? Trey Tucker, 8 catches, 145 yards, and 3 touchdowns, has had the best in-game performance for a player this entire year. Wow. Very impressive from Trey Tucker. Brock Bowers, 4 catches, 38 yards. Jacoby Myers, 3 catches, 63 yards. Also did their part, but this was the Trey Tucker show left, right, and center. Thankfully, the Commanders' defense came up big and managed to stop them here and there in the Commanders' offense. Also held on. Mariota runs in a touchdown. McNichols ran in a touchdown. And Crosby Merritt also ran in a touchdown. The lone passing touchdown went to the younger brother of Christian McCaffrey and Luke McCaffrey, who had 3 catches for 56 yards at Tutty. And Scary Terry had 3 catches for 74 yards and might have injured himself, which is not very good. Good start to the season for the Commanders. 41-24, they knock off the Raiders, who will look to bounce back against the Bears coming up this next weekend. Rounding out our noon games. Round out our noon games. The Browns upset the Packers 13-10, and just a poor showing for the Packers. Packers, how's it feel? How's it feel to suck? Oh my goodness. How is this the best team in the NFC North? I refuse to believe that at all. 2-1 now. Yeah. Packers, bad, bad, bad. Josh Jacobs, 12 points. Jordan Love, 11. Matthew Golding, 10. No one showed out. For the Browns, Quishon Judkins had 16.5 fantasy points. He was the best on the day. Cleveland D had 14, and David Njoku had 9. This was a boring game. I mean, it was 3-0 heading into halftime, and then it was 10-0 heading into the fourth quarter before a scoreless fourth for the Packers results in a comeback with, by the way, 3 minutes left. At the 3-minute mark, it was 10-0. Then Andre Seisman hit a 35-yarder. Then Quishon Judkins ran it in 30 seconds later. And then Andre Smith hits a 55-yarder to seal the deal and hand victory to the Browns. Browns are now 1-2 and pick up their first win of the season. Good for you, Browns. You're no longer one of the worst teams in the NFL. You're better than the Titans, the Texans, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Giants, and the Saints. So good for you, Browns. For the Packers, Jordan Love, 183 yards, a touchdown and a pick. Average. Josh Jacobs only 30 yards on 16 carries. Receiving wise, Josh Jacobs had 5 catches for 44 yards, and Matthew Goine had 4 catches for 52 yards. Packers, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. Maybe he'll bounce back next week against the Cowboys, but I doubt it. I severely doubt it. I don't think you guys are going to turn your luck around at all. I think you guys are going to suck the rest of the season. For the Browns, Joe Flacco, 142 yards and a pick. Didn't look good at all. Quishon Judkins, 18 carries, 94 yards and a touchdown. Did literally everything, and Njoku had 5 catches for 40 yards. Jerry Jeudy fantasy owners, 1 catch, 17 yards. Could never be me. I'll never pick Jerry Jeudy again since his Bronco days are over. So, excellent win for the Browns here in a piss-poor game. I'm just happy to see the Packers lose as a Vikings fan. Speaking of the Broncos, they lose to the Chargers 23-20 thanks to a game winner from Cameron Dicker. One of the better games of the 3:30 slate. Very entertaining. Cortland Sutton puts up 23 fantasy points. J.K. Dobbins 15 and Bo Nix 13. Amari Hampton, breakout game for the rookie, 25 fantasy points. Keenan Allen at 19.5 and Quentin Johnson 14.9. Yeah, excellent game all around. Cortland Sutton had a 52-yard catch. You also had Keenan Allen catch a 29-yarder. Some of the big throws for the game. Bo Nix goes 153 yards and a touchdown. Pretty piss poor. J.K. Dobbins had 83 yards and a touchdown. Good for him. Cortland Sutton, 6 catches, 118 yards and a touchdown. Looked like wide receiver 1. He looked like the role he's supposed to be filling. For the Chargers, hey, they're 3-0. I just want to say the Chargers are 3-0. They're one of the best teams in the league. Broncos fall to 1-2 and are tied for second in the AFC West. Amari Hampton, 70 yards and a tutty. Good stuff for him. Quentin Johnson, 6 catches, 89 yards. Also had a ridiculous 11 targets. Oh, my. Keenan Allen, 7 catches, 65 yards. Gets a touchdown. And Amari Hampton, 6 catches, 59 yards. Ladd McConkey, 4 catches, 41 yards. Is not looking like wide receiver 1. He's looking like wide receiver 3 out there. Yeah, Quentin Johnson off the waiver wire. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll keep him all year long. Chargers, 3-0. Great work. One of the more shocking teams. Them and the Colts, I don't think anyone would have predicted them starting out 3-0. Their upcoming slate, Giants, Commanders, Dolphins, Colts, Vikings, Titans. I mean, it is a very interesting slate for the Chargers the rest of the way. And I like their odds. I really do. So Chargers, impressive performance all around. They are undefeated. Broncos, you know what? You're not as bad as people say, but you really got to lock in on defense. Next up, one of the biggest blowouts of the week. Seahawks win 44-13. And at one point, actually heading into halftime, they were up 8-6. I think it was 38-6 heading into halftime. But this was insane. So we start off the game. Jaxon Smith-Njigba catches a touchdown. Then Troy Horton gets a 95-yard punt return. They then march down 3 minutes later and get a touchdown. It started off 21-0. Then Blake Grupp kicks a field goal. Then Torrey Horton, the same guy who returned the punt, catches a touchdown from Sam Darnold. They then get the ball back after a 4-and-out, and Kenneth Walker runs a touchdown. It was crazy. From there, field goals the rest of the way, and Jake Stoll, Kyle Little, 13-yarder from Spencer Rattler to end the game. But yeah, crazy work from the Seahawks. The here, their defense put up 17. I had to play them. They were looking prime. Chris Olave had 15 for the Saints. Spencer Rattler, 11. Juwan Johnson, 11. Yeah, Saints, I think, are the worst team in the league. Those are some of my final thoughts on the Saints. They will fall to 0-3 and have a minus 43-point differential. Oh, brother. For the Seahawks, 20 points for Jaxon Smith-Njigba, 18 for Torrey Horton, and 18 for Kenneth Walker. Rattler, 218 yards, a touchdown and a pick. Alvin Kamara, 42 yards on the ground. Chris Olave had 10 catches, though. Wow, 10 catches, 57 yards. Juwan, 6 catches, 51 yards. It is that Stoll who on 2 passes got a touchdown. I always love when randos catch touchdowns. It makes fantasy owners so angry. For the Seahawks, Sam Darnold, 14 for 18, 218 yards and 2 touchdowns. Didn't have to do much, and he looked good. They even brought in Drew Locke to end out the game. Kenneth, on only 16 rushes for 38 yards, gets 2 tutties. Good for him. Smith and Jigba caught a tutty. Torrey Horton, of course, caught a tutty and returned a punt. And Cooper Kupp had two catches for 31 yards. Jackson Smith and Jigba is a animal. And the Seahawks are now 2-1, and the AFC West is looking very good. Everyone is 2-1, except for the 49ers, who are 3-0 as they knock off the Cardinals in a game which I think everyone's watching going, how are the 49ers losing this? Luckily, they clutch up, and Eddie Pinheiro hits a 35-yard game winner. Oh my goodness, it was a wild, wild matchup. Trey McBride had 15, Kyler Murray 14, only double-digit scores from fantasy for the Cardinals. McCaffrey, 24 points. McCaffrey's a beauty. Ricky Purcell had 19, and Mac Jones, 13.96. But boring first half. It goes in 6-3, and then heading into fourth at 6-6, just field goals left, right, and center. I mean, pretty boring. For finally, Kyle Juszczyk runs in a little, actually, I think it was like a little screen pass from Mac Jones, who got it in. Then the Cardinals come back and answer. It's all tied up, 13-13, and then we get a defensive holding in the end zone from the 49ers, which results in a safety for the Cardinals. They somehow use up all their timeouts, get the ball back, make it all the way down, and then Eddie Pinheiro chips in a little 35-yard gimme to win the day. 49ers still undefeated, 3-0, but they might be fraudsters for being 3-0. Cardinals are 2-1, and having this be your lone loss is not too bad. And I was saying Cardinals were going to be one of the biggest frauds for being 2-0. That's what I said coming into this week, and I can safely say that they impressed me. Their defense was very good. Their offense, not so good. Murray, 159 yards and a touchdown. Trey Benson, 10 carries for 42 yards. James Conner had 9 and got injured. Marvin Harrison, 3 catches, 44 yards. Trey McBride, 5 catches, 43 yards, a touchdown. I mean, literally nothing was going on offensively. None whatsoever. For the 49ers, I mean, it was the McCaffrey show. It was the McCaffrey show. I mean, this dude is just an animal. Mac Jones, 284 yards, touchdown and pick. Good for him. 17 rushes, 52 yards for McCaffrey. He had 10 catches for 88 yards. Oh my goodness, still such an animal. And Ricky Purcell, currently wide receiver 1 with Kittle and Ayuk out. 8 catches, 117 yards. Good stuff. The 49ers avoid a abysmal upset and win 16-50. I'm not going to say it was a good game, but the ending was somewhat entertaining. 49ers, moving on. They'll play the Jaguars next week. Very winnable game. I just want to say that is a super winnable game for them. As for the Cardinals, they will play the Seahawks in the Battle of the Birds. So best of luck to them as they will play a former bird in the Seahawks, which I definitely have the Seahawks in that one. Then we got to America's Game of the Week, Bears and Cowboys. And what do you know? The Bears can actually be a good football team. They win 31-14 and make the Cowboys look silly. Good win. First win of the season for the Bears. Cowboys will fall to 1-2. DJ Moore had 12.8 points. Thank you, DJ. Finally get me some fantasy points. Goodness me, this guy's been doing absolutely nothing as he caught a fourth quarter touchdown. But it's Caleb Williams, 29 fantasy points. He looked amazing. He looked like a number one pick. Cam Ward, Bryce Young, take notes on this guy. Bird in the third, some random wide receiver, had 19.8 points. And Romo Odunze had 15. Jake Ferguson, 21.2 points, was the best looking Cowboys player. I mean, you could easily tell when you're watching, he was the best player. George Pickens, 17.8, and Javonte Williams, 12.2. I mean, no scoring in the fourth. This was all Bears all day. You know, heading into halftime, it was 24-14. And like you had one score in the third, and that was it. That was it. The defense just kept stuffing the Cowboys over and over and over. It was a good showing. Great showing, actually, from the Bears. For Dallas, Dak, 251 yards, touchdown, 2 picks. Just couldn't get past this Bears defense. He couldn't. They even brought in Joe Milton III to end the game, and he had 41 yards and threw a pick. It was hilarious. Javonte, 76 yards. Miles Sanders at 41. Jake Ferguson, 13 catches, 8 yards. The most catches of any player on the day. And Pickens catches a touchdown. But let's talk about Chicago. Caleb, 298 yards, 4 touchdowns. Amazing. Truly amazing. Nothing was done on the ground, like 33 yards from Swift. That was it. They actually had 6 different players run the ball at one point. Receiving-wise, DJ Moore had the most catches with 4. had 21 yards for a touchdown. Bird in the third, no idea who this guy is. Three catches, 101 yards, a touchdown. He had a 65-yarder, which was impressive. And Rome has 62 yards on three catches for a touchdown. And don't forget about Cole Kmet, whose lone catch was a touchdown. And Loveland started off the game with a 31-yard pass. We're all like, oh my gosh, this is going to be Loveland's breakout game. Yeah, it was not Loveland's breakout game. Not whatsoever. So, of course, the Bears will play the Raiders. I actually have some of my family members going to that game in Las Vegas, so hopefully the Bears can get it done. And as for the Cowboys, I mean, I don't even know what the Cowboys are doing. I have no idea. And do I care? No, not whatsoever. They play the Packers coming up. Oh, Sunday Night Football. Okay, might actually be an entertaining game. I'm probably picking the Packers in that because the Cowboys look like fraudsters. They're yet to do anything impressive. So, we'll wrap up our little Week 3 recap here. Always goes longer than I hope to, but Chiefs and Giants on Sunday Night Football, it sucked. It was a boring game. This Chiefs team looks terrible. I mean, I'm just going to say it. They're 1-2. They do not look as good. I do not think they're making it back to the Super Bowl. I'm going to say that right here and then. Shout out to their new star wide receiver, Tyquan Thornton. He appears to be the only person Patrick Mahomes wants to throw to. He had 18 points. 18 points for Thornton. Good work as he catches a touchdown in the third quarter. Mahomes had 13, and the Chiefs defense had 13 fantasy points as they held the Giants to only 9 points. Scadabo, 24.1 points, was the biggest star of Sunday Night Football. I mean, Cam Scadabo having a breakout season now with the Giants. What could be rookie of the year? Who knows? Darius Slayton had 7. Tyrone Tracy Jr. had 5. Oh, man, it was rough. Rough day to be a Giants fan. I just want to say, heading into halftime, it was 9-7. Like, this was a boring game. Actually, no, it was 9-6. The PAT was blocked by the Chiefs. Graham Gano would make it 9-9 in the fourth quarter. Oh, wait, no. Tyquan scored in the third. So, yeah, it was game over. They even scored a touchdown with 6 minutes left from Kareem Hunt, and then Harrison Butker missed the extra point. Yeah, this game sucked. Chiefs win 22-9. They escape. I say escape because really they escaped with this win. It was awful. Taylor Swift will join them as they take on the Ravens at 3:30 next week. Why is this not? Why is the Chiefs and Ravens not on Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football? It's just at 3:30 on a Sunday. Oh my gosh, this game is going to be amazing. I cannot wait for that one. As for the Giants. The Giants, do they even have a win yet? The Giants might be winless. I think the Giants are one of the worst teams in the league. Yes, they are. The Giants are 0-3 to start the year. Wow. Wow. Tough stuff for the Giants. They have a minus 31 point differential. What do they got going next? Giants will be taking on the Chargers. Yeah, I do not have them winning that. No siree whatsoever. So, yeah, sucky game. Sucky overall. Mahomes had 224 yards and a touchdown. Good for him. Pacheco, 45 yards. Kareem Hunt ran a touchdown. Thornton, 5 catches, 7 yards at Tutty. Smith-Schuster, 4 catches, 55 yards. And Kelsey, 4 catches, 26 yards. They barely even use him. Well, Russell Wilson, 160 yards, 2 touches, 2 picks. Wow, really bad. But let's talk about Cam Scabo real quick. 10 rushes, 60 yards, and a touchdown. 6 catches, 61 yards. Amazing. They passed once to Wandale Robinson. They passed twice to Malik Nabers. The Giants looked lost out there. They really did. Bring in Jackson Dart. Let's bench Russell Wilson. I don't know why he's even starting. Let's give the rookie a shot. That's all I'm going to say. But that's all I got for NFL Week 3, ladies and gentlemen. I just want to outright say is that I am locked in for Monday Night Football. I need Lamar Jackson to put up a masterclass because I'm also playing Riley Patterson. I think his name is the Lions kicker. Oh, no, it's Bates, isn't it? It's that Jesse Bates. Is it Jesse Bates I'm trying to think of? Let me check. Jake Bates. I'm playing. So I'm hoping that he doesn't get that many points. He's been looking good, though, 8-9. And Lamar's, of course, the number one quarterback in fantasy right now. So we need Lamar to at least get 6-7 points. He needs to at least get 7 points because I'm down 6.54. And then once he gets 7 points, let's say he has a good touchdown drive, he then needs to outpace the kicker and Bates. So best of luck, O'Gary. You know, I'm coming for you. You're only up 6.54. But I got Lamar Jackson on Monday Night Football, so we'll have to see. I'm in a lot of leagues. Got a lot going on. I'm playing Amon-Ra in 2 different leagues, but also I need Amon-Ra to get 2 points for me to win in another league. So it's pretty funny, but that's all I got for fantasy football, for NFL overall. It has been a good week. Good week in fantasy football and in football. We'll look ahead to the next week as we come ahead. And yeah, go Ravens tonight over the Lions. But let's get into our finale of this. And I was so pumped for WrestlePalooza. It was the debut on ESPN for WWE going down in Indianapolis. I thought it was going down at the big stadium, but no, it was at the small stadium, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, 18,176 packing it. And this event, let me just like let you all know, is that Triple H had promised us that this was going to be amazing. He promised this was going to give us surprises and shocks that we weren't expecting, and that is what he promised. And we start off the show. I just want to say, the stage from the get-go looked like Raw SmackDown. It looked so small budget, and it just had the WrestlePalooza logo everywhere, which, by the way, WrestlePalooza, there's no theme to it. It's a dumb name. It reminds me of Crown Jewel. Like, it's just stupid. That was annoying. Stage, annoying. Crowd, somewhat getting into it as we have John Cena come out to start the show. He comes out. He has all these kids with him. It's super high energy. You can feel it. He gets this triumphant entrance. It's amazing. And then Brock Lesnar comes out, and he just looks intimidating. His entrance is just super mean mugging, and it gives him so much aura. And then Paul Heyman surprises us, comes out, and announces Brock Lesnar, and this feels like a big fight. Feel like you're just kind of thinking like WrestlePalooza is about to become a big deal. What we then got, what we then proceeded to get was an 8 minute and 50 second squash match. A squash match of Brock Lesnar beating John Cena. I mean, six F5s, and he basically no-sells 3 out of 2 adjustments in a row. I mean, this was awful. Kids were crying. It sucked the entire life out of the arena. This was the one thing no one wanted. They didn't even care if Brock Lesnar won. We just wanted a good match. We wanted some story to it. We wanted this to feel like the definitive end. And now we know there's going to be this theme like, oh, Brock Lesnar, he's going to be the one guy I need to get back, which means this is definitely not the last we see of John Cena. And this is as Santi's app, one of my favorite wrestling YouTubers, says, we are in a low John Cena appearance economy. He has 5 more appearances. He has 3 PLEs and 2 Raws. Then John Cena is done. John Cena will never be in WWE again. It's going to be insane. And here he is getting squashed by Brock Lesnar. It was awful. It was boring. The crowd was booing, and they weren't booing because the heel won. They were booing because it sucked. This absolutely sucked. It killed the vibe. It wasn't good, and I was fairly disappointed in this. To go from here, I mean, John Cena doesn't appear until October 11th at Crown Jewel. He has no scheduled appearances, so I don't know if they're going to build him up to an opponent. He's going to have an open challenge. I have a feeling there's a wrestler called Grayson Waller, and he does like his talk show in the ring. I have a feeling they might bring John Cena down for that, and then we learn of his next opponent. But you have John Cena at Crown Jewel, and some tells me he's not going to be in a match. I really get that vibe. He's going to be at 2 Raws between Crown Jewel and War Games. He's going to be at Survivor Series, and then he's going to be at Saturday Night's Main Event. And those are your final 5 appearances. And I just know that there's not enough time to build up feuds here and there. And, you know, what WWE could do, same thing they did with the heel turn, is just kind of sweep this under the rug. They could just say, all right, screw this. This was bad. The fans didn't like this. And give us a whole new brand new thing and just make us be like, okay, you know, that never happened. Here's John Cena's new opponent, and he's going to win, which I kind of hope they do. And as for Brock Lesnar, I don't know if he's going to be a part-timer. I have a feeling he might join the Vision in a War Games match. I think he may join that team, but I don't really know what to think of Brock Lesnar. I really don't. He has been appearing on SmackDown, so that's good, but I really don't understand what we're doing with all this. So yeah, Brock Lesnar, John Cena, horrible start to the show. Everyone gave it an F, and even ESPN was like, it felt so lackluster. Next up, tag team match with The Vision, Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker, taking on The Usos, finally teaming up back together is The Usos. And, you know, just, they also did this random thing announcing LA Knight was the guest referee, but they did it the day of, and I heard of it through other channels that weren't even WWE, and I'm like, why didn't you just do this on Raw or SmackDown? Why did you do it the day of? It made no sense. And like I said, this event never recovered. I'm just going to tell you right now. This event never recovered from how bad it started out because no one cared. No one cared. They've been seeing The Vision and The Usos feud on Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown, especially Monday Night Raw, the past months. They've been doing this for months, and just no one cared. And then LA Knight was like, I don't care. You can use tables and chairs, and you know, it was just run-of-the-mill. It's not a bad tag team match, but we have to look at it in context, is that it's following something bad, and when you're trying to follow something bad, and it's something we've seen before, no one's going to care. Like, The Usos reuniting didn't even feel that big. It didn't. And then to make matters even worse, Jey Uso gives himself a concussion or something. They prematurely stop the match. You literally see LA Knight call for a spear. 1, 2, 3, that's that. I mean, it was rough. And then Jey Uso looks so out of it. So nothing's even advertised for Raw with these guys. Thankfully, the right team won. you know, I'll try and find some goodness here. But this match went 17 minutes, and even got to a point I'm just like, what time is it? 17 minutes? Oh, my. Wow. So, Braun, Serena, and Braun Breaker win. They actually look dominant. They actually look good, for goodness sakes. And Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso look like absolute scrubs. So, all I can presume is this feud's going to continue on. Maybe LA Knight will have a matchup with, I don't even know, Braun Breaker at Crown Jewel. This feud is far from over, and I don't even see an end game to this feud. I really don't. So let's just enjoy what we that's not even enjoy. Let's put up with what we have to. But this was just boring. It was boring, and I think that's the worst thing, is like, it wasn't bad, it was just boring. But then, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to tell you, not everything on Crown Jewel was bad, all right? We still had some good here. Stephanie Vaquer defeating Io Sky to become the new Women's World Championship as they wrestled for the vacant Women's World Championship. 20 minutes and 11 seconds, and yes, this is a match of the year contender. It's crazy to think that the women have been doing some amazing things this year. They have had amazing matches. Becky Lynch and Lara Valkyra, Io Sky, Rhea Ripley. You have seen Io Sky, Rhea Ripley, and Bianca Belair. You have seen gems this year, and Io Sky and Stephanie Vaquer joins that crowd. This was a fantastic match. And this match where it's like you're watching the Usos and Braun Breaker and Braun Strowman, you're like, 17 minutes? Oh my gosh, that took forever. This was 20 minutes, and you're like, what? No, I want more. I want more of this. It was perfect. And it just makes sense. You know, storyline-wise, it makes complete sense. And Stephanie Vaquer's finish, I didn't even know what her finish was, to be honest. I thought it was that one thing where she, like, bashed at the opponent's heads in with her knee. But no, she had, like, the spinning kick or spinning thing off the top of the ropes and landed on her, and it was a beautiful finish, and it was a beautiful moment. She celebrated with her dad outside of the ring. I loved it. I love it. Stephanie Vaquer, you are the new Women's World Champion, and it is fantastic. It is just amazing. As for Io Sky, doesn't even look bad here. Like, she hit some shots, and here these two were doing some amazing moves. I really got to see the full versatility of both of these women, and yes, it is a match of the year contender. When we look back, this will be up there for one of the best matches of the year, not just for women, but for men in general. And it makes me sad that this happened on such a bad card, but also it kind of makes me happy, is because when we talk about WrestlePalooza, we'll be like, okay, wait, Io Sky and Stephanie Vaquer was the one good point of this card. So happy for them. 5-star match, did amazing, and despite the crowd not being into it, you couldn't help but get into it by the end. So the crowd managed to get some life put back into it with this masterclass. What is next for both of them? Well, Stephanie Vaquer is going to go feud for the freaking Crown Jewel Championship with Tiffany Stratton. So filler feud, unless Tiffany Stratton loses to Jade Cargill and Nia Jax. I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll have to see. But yeah, so she'll be competing against someone for the Crown Jewel Championship, which is just boring. Oh my goodness, such a waste. And then Io Sky has a feud with Asuka and Kairi Sane. She's got a whole program going with them. I have a feeling she may team with Rhea Ripley against Kairi Sane and Asuka, which would be amazing. Do that at Crown Jewel. I can get behind that. That works. So this was one of the high points of this card. And then we had another high point, CM Punk and AJ Lee taking on Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch and winning in a 29-minute and 18-second matchup. Holy cow. Holy cow. And it got to a point where I was like, this is a long match. I was tuning in. I'd be like, I was watching on TikTok live. Hey, don't hate the viewer, hate the person showing it. I was just scrolling through and it was on my live. Okay? All right. So don't hate me, but this was great. This was great. The entrances were good. You could just kind of see the husband and wife chemistry with both of them, and these two delivered a fantastic match. It was a slow build to start. They were really, really leaning into the AJ Lee hot tag, like way more than I thought they needed to. Like CM Punk was in the matchup for probably 50% of it before they tagged AJ Lee in, and then they were wrestling outside of the ring, and you know, then you were having Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins, and you had all four of them putting each other in submissions. It was hilarious. Like when Seth Rollins got put in the Black Widow, it was so funny, and you had this great table spot. I thought the spot on the announce tables was fantastic. You had so many fake outs. You had a moment where I thought CM Punk and AJ Lee were both going to get a double submission. Then I thought that Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch were both going to get a double pin at the same time. But then the finish is Becky Lynch is about to hit AJ Lee with the manhandle slam. She reverses it into the Black Widow. And I'm not going to lie, it looked like Becky Lynch was not really doing what she was supposed to properly. But she did tap. So at the end of the day, AJ Lee and CM Punk win, just as I predicted. It works. It's great. It's going to be fantastic for the future. Great matchup. All around, loved to see it. It was a tinge long, but it was a bright spot on this card. Now, what is next, you may wonder? Well, Seth Rollins is off to fight for the Crown Jewel Championship against Cody Rhodes. Boring. Which only makes me guess that CM Punk will go feud with The Vision. That's my guess. I would love to see him do something else, but I don't think that's going to happen. And then for AJ Lee and Becky Lynch, I wonder if they're going to start their Intercontinental Championship feud or else something else is going to happen. But we'll have to wait till Friday night, SmackDown, Monday Night Raws to see what actually happens. But this was a good matchup, I will say. And especially for how much they have been building up this feud over the last month or so, it definitely had a great payoff here. But then we went to the main event, and heading into the main event, I will say is that there had been no surprises, there had been no shocks, there had been nothing that made me say this is a massive event, and my only thought process is they're going to end the show with a big return. Chris Jericho, The Rock, you're going to see Gunther come back, you're going to see Randy Orton heel turn or something, you're going to see something happen. What we got was a 17-minute, literally the second shortest matchup on the card, fight of Cody Rhodes just beating Drew McIntyre. I think he hit two crossroads the whole thing, and he hit one crossroads to pin him after a Super Cody Cutter. So, yeah, that was it. And there were just some weird moments in here that stick out. Like, there's a moment where Cody Rhodes was going to run off the ropes, then hit a Cody Cutter, and he, like, it looked like his knee collapsed, and he just, like, paused, hit, like, a Superman pose on the ground, and then went up, jumped, and hit it. And I was like, okay, then wasn't limpy at all or anything. There was then this moment where Drew McIntyre was going to boot Cody Rhodes through the announce table, and the ref was stopping him. But if we think, like, logically, like, I understand WWE is, like, all fake, it's all scripted, but if we logically think, like, why would the ref ever stop him? It didn't even make sense. So people are like, there's no reason the ref should be stopping him. Like, it just doesn't make sense, even in WWE language. And then after that, you know, Drew injures his leg or something, gets hit with the Super Cody Cutter, eats one crossroads, and that's it. All right, so then we're like, okay, Cody Rhodes kind of won abruptly. Now we wait for someone to come out, and Cody Rhodes is celebrating, and then the credits are rolling, and I'm like, all right, we're going to get a CM Punk fake out, and then we're already panning to the announce table, and I'm like, okay, are we going to get a super fake out here? And that was that. And it was literally like, that was it. And this was so bad. Like, the entire internet wrestling community is just in agreement, like, this should never have happened. And the best part is that there was a plan change from John Cena to Brock Lesnar winning the day of. There was also a creative decision to not do what Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes both suggested, which was that Randy Orton cost Cody Rhodes the WWE Championship. Creative said no, which only makes me think Triple H didn't want to do it. So the WWE is just ignoring all this hatred. I know they aren't going to react to it at all. It's just what you do with this thing, but this was bad. This was bad, and the best part, ESPN themselves tweeted that the show was underwhelming. Like, it was insane. ESPN writer Andreas Hale gave the event a C, calling the show average, saying the excellent Vacare vs. Sky match saved the show from being truly average, while knowing the rest of the card was underwhelming and fell short of expectations. Yes, absolutely. On the booth, you know, Triple H was there. He basically said, yeah, it's going to be Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins for the Crown Jewel Championship at Crown Jewel, which means Crown Jewel is just a filler event. Snore. Boring. I hate this. Yeah, so disappointment all around, and it just makes me sad. It really does make me sad. You know, I had high expectations for this event, and it just fell short. It just really did fall short. So, for the future, Cody Rhodes will be taking on Seth Rollins, and Drew McIntyre, I assume, will just feud with Randy Orton or something. Those two might compete in a match for the stipulation at Crown Jewel. But yeah, just underwhelming all around. I understand this August to December period is always slow. You know, your prime WWE comes between January and August, you know, especially the road to WrestleMania from Royal Rumble to Mania. That's the peak WWE gets. But I mean, come on, guys. What are we doing here? Just disappointment all around. I have nothing but poor things to say except for two good matches on this card. And by the way, Cody Rhodes vs. McIntyre isn't even a bad matchup. Like, let's say this was the SmackDown main event. You'd be saying, I got a great matchup on the main event of SmackDown. But to be a giant main event of a pay-per-view, like, I'd have rather seen Brock Lesnar squash John Cena to end the show than open the show. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, WrestleBlooza falls short of expectations, but all you can do is pack up and look towards the future for brighter days. So, next time we talk about WWE, will be Crown Jewel. Coming up, it'll actually be on the same episode we give our UFC Rio predictions, funny enough. And then we won't talk about anything till the end of, November is when Survivor Series War Games is. So we don't have much WWE talk on here over the next few months. But when we do, we'll make sure we're covering every PLE and recapping it as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for today's episode. Hope you learned something. Hope you were surprised. I hope you are going to be going with who I predicted for Dana White's Contender Series. Also, let me know who you guys are riding with. for tonight's game between the Ravens and the Lions, and also who you got in fantasy football. I'm always curious to see who your favorite players are, because you know everyone has players they like to draft, don't like to draft, and I am similar to everyone else in that aspect. So, ladies and gentlemen, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you and give you his peace. Everyone go out, make it the best week of your lives. I know I'm going to make it the best week of my life. And I'll see you next time on none other than the show you're listening to, the Surprise Jab Podcast.